Voice of the Silence. The voice is what we would call a paradox. How can there be a voice in silence? And if we go and we look at it, there are many paradoxes that are contained in this small little book. But there's also much poetry that sort of we can understand in a different way. So if we open the book, it states the voice of the silence and other chosen fragments from the Book of the Golden Precepts for the daily use of Lanu. And that Lanu's our disciples. So we are given a book here that has been very sacred and very time-honored. So what is contained in it, and for what purpose has HPB brought it forth for us? The voice is dedicated to the journey of the soul, and that it embraces that Buddha nature. In fact, this is a sacred text of the Mahayana Buddhists that these ideas are time-honored, and that if you get the book from the lodge, in it or in the back of it are the stanzas of Zen, which is also from the Book of the Golden Precepts, which is the secret doctrine. So we in comparison, we look and we see the greatness or the depth or the expansion of this treatise. We begin by reading something. We'll read the be very beginning of the Voice of the Silence. We'll start with fragment one. And it's really like an introduction to what follows. These instructions are for those ignorant of the dangers of the lower iddhi. The iddhi is our psychic faculties. He who hears the voice of nada, the soundless voice, and comprehend it, he has to learn the nature of dharana. And dharana is concentration. Having become indifferent to objects of perception, the pupil must seek out the raja of the senses, the thought producer, he who awakes illusion. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. For when to himself his form appears unreal, as do on waking all the forms he sees in dreams, when he ceases to hear the many, he will discern the one, the inner voice, which kills the outer. Then only, not till then, shall he forsake the region of asat, the false, to come into the realm of Sat, the true. Before the soul can see, the harmony within must be attained, and fleshly eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. Before the soul can hear, the image man has to become as deaf to roarings as to whispers, to cries of bellowing elephants as to the silvery buzz of golden firefly. Behold, the soul can comprehend and may remember. She must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is molded is first united with the potter's mind. And then the soul will hear and will remember, and then to the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence. Here we are given the introduction. And what is it simply saying? Look within. Take your gaze off that of the outer world and put your gaze within. And the entire book is devoted to that inner perception, that inner journey, the journey of the true disciple. This is not a journey that many wish to take. Because it's the road of self-sacrifice. It's the road of compassion. HP gives us three, only three from the book of the Golden Precepts, but these three contain a journey. And in the first, in which she calls the voice of the silence, she speaks of three halls that the soul goes through, or the consciousness. First is the hall of ignorance, is where we find ourselves now. Then the hall of learning, where we build a bridge to the next hall, the hall of wisdom. So there's ignorance, there's learning, and there's wisdom. The three halls of our life, which we enter. So we find ourselves in this hall of ignorance and we see the light. And what that light points to is the hall of learning. And that learning eventually leads to wisdom. But wisdom, not detached from the heart, but a blending of the mind and the heart. And it is a path. It is a journey. And HPP says, thou canst not travel on the path before thou hast become that path itself. That does not speak to our rational mind. That speaks to something deeper within us because it is the truth. But how is that true? What are the inner feelings that we get generated from that idea? In the first section, it's really a looking within and to enter this path. But then we come to the second aspect or part or this and fragment, and it's about two paths. One is of liberation. the other of renunciation. So what does this mean? Well, it is saying that we need to live not for ourselves, but for others. We need to forget the self and be of service to others. So that becomes our duty, our dharma. That every human being is to act not for oneself, but for others. Or the path of liberation is that, yes, you can learn all of this. You can become familiar with all of this, but you can liberate yourself for many lives, for many eternities. But you will come back. You will still incarnate at some time. But this path of renunciation will free us to go into other states of consciousness, to keep on moving forward. Then the third path, or the third fragment, is out of the seven portals. Is how do we set ourselves free from these chains of worldly existence? How do we separate ourselves, knowing that we have two natures? One is higher and one is lower. And that we have to gain control of that lower personal man so that that impersonal aspect can come forth. To do that, we are given some, we say, help or aspirations. That there are ways of attaining a good life, a harmonious life, a directed life, and that is through virtue. And these virtues are simply aspects of our very being. And the basic aspect of our being is love, is light. In the philosophy of theosophy, it states that we are spiritual beings that have descended upon earth to bring forth all of life to higher states of consciousness. So at our root, we are love. And these virtues tell us that love is the basis of our understanding of all that follows. With that key, you can open that door to that key of harmony, where word and deed, which counterbalances the cause and effect, and leaves no room for karmic action, where one has freedom cells. One has gained patience to endure, to keep on going on, keep on trying. Then where we are now, this fourth virtue is that of indifference to pleasure and to pain, illusion conquered and truth alone perceived. We are at that stage where we need to look and see what is true and what is not true, what is real and what is not real. And we come where we have broken the chains of our lower nature, where they do no longer control us, and that we have made our being able to access that higher part of our nature. Now, once one has achieved this love and harmony and patience and this attitude of renunciation, one has laid the foundation in one nature, and one sees arising in himself energies of a universal nature, because one's become more in harmony with nature itself. And this brings us on to higher states of consciousness, where we see the truth, where we can understand that there is a higher world, there is a spiritual world, and that spiritual world is one of compassion and mercy. And then we attain that which is that which lies within us, that godhood, or that understanding that is beyond merely the intellectual. It is that knowing, is that intuitive perception of what is real and what is not real. That is the journey. And these virtues are simply means for understanding who and what we are. Now, if the fact that we are given this at a time in our lives, in the existence of humanity, where we are warned by HPB that we must be careful that the intellectual and the psychic nature doesn't outrun the spiritual, so that these precepts or these guides or these, guess we call texts of awakening. Because in our studies we find that, the voice of the silence, what is that? Well, we found that silence, there's four kinds of silence. Silence of sound, silence of desire, silence of thought, and silence of will. We are told that the highest path, that one that we reads leads to that path that we are all talking about. And that is the path of the silence of thought. We need to silence our thought. So this text, we can talk about it, and we are trying to give our impressions and a little insight so that when you do read it, look at it from different aspects, but look at it from within. What is it speaking to, or who is it speaking to? This study will awaken our spiritual development. Whether we understand it consciously or not, it will awaken. And the remember in school we were asked to memorize things and become familiar with certain things and life has found out that by doing that very thing, by memorizing things that are important, or simply reading them over and over again, and pressing upon the mind these spiritual ideas, that our lower mind, as we're well aware, has been in control. And the only time we have come to need help and need advice is when we took on the battle between the lower and the higher. Because there are many who see us as spiritual beings that have coming into the world to raise ourselves to higher states of consciousness. That is our journey. And we only do that through experience. And the Gita says that yes, but there's a way of taking those experiences. Our attitude of mind is very critical. And that's why we have to be reminded that we are spiritual beings. We have no beginning, we have no end. This consciousness is experiencing from life after life a kind of awakening. Who knows how many lives we've been struggling until we've come to this point where we see that there is a higher world, that this world that we live in is but temporary, ever changing. And theosophy has come to show us how we can live in this world and develop our spiritual understanding and knowledge to raise ourselves to higher states of consciousness. But it's like the young bird. The mother comes and feeds them, and they sit there with open mouth, and they are fed. Well, if you're looking for that, you've come to the wrong place. You have to find it yourself. We, as fellow students, are only here to help each other, help awaken in ourselves our true spiritual nature. And that is compassion. We had a fellow student sent us a portion of a talk that he had given on this very subject, but he concentrated it on really the dedication. We find that our friend used or stated that the voice of silence uses paradox as a method of awakening soul wisdom. So, think about it. And well, we don't want to leave on a stone unturned, but we know how that goes. There's so many stones out there that we just want to give you a bird's eye glimpse of the voice. But I can only put out what I have been given, and that the only way you will find theosophy and those truths if you want it. How strong is your desire to want it? Because behind will stands desire. So as soon as we paralyze that lower desires, the sooner we will understand more fully these ideas. Well, there's a little bit, but we would like to hear from anyone here if anything they would like to contribute, and on their very reading of the voice, the silence. Yes, SL.
What would be the significance of the fact that the voice of the silence or the Book of the Golden Precepts comes from the same source as the stanzas of Zan?
Correct.
What would be that? What How would that be significant?
Well, first, as they're being the same ideas, these are there. And if you read the secret doctrine, you see the same symbolism. And we would just acknowledge that. By reading both, you can see how they are of the same ideas, the same nature. Everything is based on sound and vibration. The word was the first sound. So that these vibrations are found in our very being, in the breath we breathe. But we as self-conscious beings direct that breath and use that breath. So it really it's about the journey within, and both the Zan, the stanzas of Zan, and the voice of the silence is where you that journey takes you. So we see that similarity, but perhaps you have other. No? No. Okay. And there, yes, I see MHW.
Yes, thank you. So that journey that was just mentioned, we were wondering if we can look at the voice of the silence as being a roadmap towards living that higher, compassionate life. The first, we think it would be like the first two stanzas are how we, it's like how we clear the lower mind in order to accept and live by the virtues. And it's the virtues that we need to accomplish in order to live that higher life. Can we say that that's kind of what that roadmap is about to that journey?
Well, it is a roadmap. The Bhagavad Gita is a roadmap. The Dharmapada is a roadmap. There are very many roadmaps. It's what appeals to ourselves, our nature. And that these ideas are very sacred. And the idea that to travel this path is one of self-sacrifice. It's the higher self to lower selves. It is a sacrifice. So one has to give up that idea of separateness. and look at the world and not be taken back by a reflection of ourselves. So, we are living in the world right now of reaction. The causes were planted a long time ago, or maybe recently, but that's how karma works. Theosophy Hall.
We were thinking about that question regarding the common source of the secret doctrine and the voice of the silence. And what came to mind is we found it interesting, the secret doctrine. Now, when a student first finds theosophy, obviously, for the most part, we think it would be through, lectures or ideas presented in simple ways that are magnetic and attract the attention of any individual, and then they begin the study. Well, typically we think you don't begin the study with the voice of the silence. You might begin it with articles that you find, or if you find a lodge, the ocean or the key to theosophy, which reference the secret doctrine. So the point is, so the secret doctrine, the intro to the secret doctrine, we don't remember exactly what it is, but it's something along the lines of it was brought, it's that the we brought it forward. We called it forth. Is that what it was? So we called the secret doctrine forth. We were ready for it. However, okay, so that has the same source as the voice of the silence. What's interesting is that the introduction to the voice of the silence doesn't say we call it forth. It says that it's for the few. So I guess what we're saying is this student in particular has found it very unusual to study and understand the voice of the silence over the years, but like anything else, effort has its results. And if we didn't have the other teachings of theosophy first before we got to the voice of the silence, we wouldn't even have picked up the voice of the silence a second time. But knowing, that we've learned the principles of the philosophy, recognizing the value of those principles, okay, so we come to the voice of the silence and we have no idea what it's talking about. But if it has the same source, then that gives us, the faith to tentatively at least put the effort forth and have faith that things will come around and we'll begin eventually to understand it rather than to accept it blindly. So we'll leave it at that.
Yes, we all come to this book for the few after much trial and error and but it's for the few. You have to want it. You have to want to know this knowledge. You have to want to know this knowledge to be a benefit to humanity. We are not here to benefit ourselves. We are here to benefit others. That's a basic idea of the Buddha nature, of our nature, is that we have within all of us compassion. Because compassion is light, is understanding, is warmth. So, yes, the voices, as said, we are given many keys, many paths to discover ourselves, our inner nature, that truly the universe is within us. When in that, we are a ray of that great sun. We are a drop in the from that great ocean. We contain within ourselves the universe. And that's what theosophy is trying to help us discover, how we are not separate, even though it appears so, but we are a relationship of ideas and millions and trillions and quadrillion years of evolution, vast amounts of time, vast eternities. We have slowly progressed to where we are now. So we have to have a grasp of the intelligence that we are and how to direct that intelligence to be of benefit to others. You know, we go through life, we're ignorant of our true nature. And then we understand that if you awaken the mind and you learn, you can learn and you can read, you can see that there is a higher life and that wisdom can be attained. SL.
Just to point out that we've had a chat for
Oh,
a
okay.
while now.
Would you like to read it, please?
Okay. Actually, it's two connected chats, so we'll read both. Could that voice in the silence be prana personified? It seems to me that is the way, because that brings to light the supreme personality within, kind of like the Krishna consciousness that is revealed by those modalities like renunciation. In being motivated by the voice of the silence, we are taught how to make our inner voice known in the existential world in others. It's not atheism when we act for the other, because the one is a unity of concepts.
No, that's very well put. You know that we say prana personified. If we're talking about Ishvara, that warrior within, as spoken of in the Gita, we would call it that, prana personified. That the supreme personality, we're talking like Krishna, like a Buddha, yes, they come and go amongst us, and they are, we may not realize it, but we are being protected by those higher energies, those higher forces, those higher beings. They sit like guardians and form a great wall to hold back the karma that man has created, and that slowly it can be released or transmuted. But yes. SL?
So this whole idea of the voice of the silence is certainly food for meditation. And it occurs that every one of us, whether we're one of the few or not, is influenced by a voice. Either it's the external voices of our environment or others, or it's our internal voices, the voices of our passions, our desires, our thoughts. And maybe that's what it means, the dangers of the lower iddhi. For most, we are ignorant of the dangers, the misconceptions, the flaws in the voices of our consciousness that come through our passions and desires. and separate of thoughts. And what this is, it's a manual for learning how to silence those thoughts. So we now become aware of or hear the voice or the impressions of our higher nature instead. It doesn't mean we still don't have feelings, but we can silence them at will through the discipline given in order to listen to our better nature.
Yes, that was a helpful contribution. And that is part of our journey. We are all students of this philosophy. And the journey is not in the outside world, it's in the inner world. And that's where this voice of the silence speaks to. That's why, even though we do not understand it, or we're not drawn to it, we should read it. Just read it. It's like the Bhagavad Gita. You sometimes don't understand it, but you read it, and it sort of has a kind of aroma about it that overtakes us in our mental atmosphere. We become kinder. Become more aware of what our thinking is and what our feelings are. SL?
We do have another chat, like read.
Okay.
As students in practice, how will and does the principle of impersonality assist us in the exercise of such virtues as love, compassion, etc.? Is this for serving in the purpose of detachment to prevent transference? And,
Well,
we're not sure what the contributor means by the term transference, but that's the challenge.
the principle of impersonality is really basis or basic to understanding theosophy, because that impersonality, it applies to everything and everyone. It's universal in its application. So that's impersonality. But in our reading and our discussion of these ideas, impersonality makes us better able to help and teach others. So that these exercise of virtues, love, compassion, is really serving a purpose where we become, we don't know if we would call it detachment, but it could be detachment in looking at it in a certain way, that we are not attached to anything that may come to pass. That we are, the practice of detachment is what we endeavor to do. Because what we are attached to, we carry around with us. MHW?
To go along with that, we think if we can get out of our way, get the personal man out of our way, that leaves us free to follow through with the impersonality, because then we can help and teach others, because we're not concentrating on ourselves and oh, I'm going to do for him so he'll do for me, kind of a thing. We do it, as the Gita says, because it's something that has to be done without expecting anything in return. And one can't do that if they're stuck in the personal aspect. So if we can free ourselves from the lower and focus on the higher impersonal self, then we're more free to help in a constructive manner.
Yes, that is the path of renunciation. Theosophy Hall, there was a hand up. No, no hand. All right.
Lose your hand.
Now there is a hand. Yes.
Is the voice of the silence the same as the voice of conscience? Or is it the voice of reason? Is it the voice of meditation? Or is it all those voices and more?
Or none of those voices. You know, that the voice of the silence is that inner voice. It's not that voice of personality. It goes into the impersonality, the universal application of our understanding. So when we silence the voices of all of these that you were mentioned, you come to that voice of the inner self. When you block out all the noise around you, all the ideas that flood our mind, all the desires that come forth in our daily life, these are what we have to silence, and then we have to be, that silence is detachment. That you have to be detached. You have to hear that fourth virtue, Virga. SL?
So this particular week, we draw to a conclusion this series of four sacred texts of humanity. But we wonder, are all sacred texts for humanity necessarily for the few? Even though it says for humanity, are they all necessarily for the few? And what does it mean?
No, well, it's for those who want it. That it's amazing that these things appear when we want it. That's how it appears in our lives. We wanted it because we could not understand all the suffering in the world. We could not understand all the strife. We could not understand what was going on. And we could not find a religion that told us. So, gosh, we found theosophy. SL.
Well, regardless of the particular tradition which has its sacred book, wouldn't the few refer to those as individuals or those individual human beings in which the sense of the sacred or the awareness of the sacred within themselves and within nature, they've become aware of it. It's already resonated with them, so they find themselves attracted to and wanting to nourish, enhance this part of their nature.
That's it comes from desire of the heart quality, desire to know the truth so that we can be of benefit to others in our thought, in our word, in our deeds. It may seem like a tall order, but that is the path of renunciation. That's the path to freedom. And again, it is for the few. So that when we come to these ideas, when you have found these ideas, it is for a reason, because we've wanted them. We don't know how we wanted them, but there was a cause. And we are reaping the effects in this life. But the only way we will reap these ideas in future lives is to give them away. But don't cast your pearls before swine. You know, keep that which is sacred, sacred. And if those who want it, give freely. But don't try to convert anyone. We know how that doesn't work. So that, you know, the voice of the silence, it's for the few. So, are we the few? We can only answer that question. Does it make sense? Do we see the poetry in the voice? Do we see the paradox that awakens in us our spiritual nature? It sort of disrupts us in our thinking. Well, we hope you found these ideas helpful and to share them with others. And we welcome you back Friday and Wednesday to our public meetings on Zoom and at 1917 Walnut Street. We wish you a good week.